Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Kind of a blowout weekend for sure weather-wise. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. We got September 23rd and 24th. Washout today, washout part of tomorrow. Things will probably get back in motion for the last few days of fluke season. It's going to end the 27th. A never-say-die situation. Just feeling it for the decoy and gunning show that's going on there at Tip Seaman Park in Tuckerton. We're going to try to get there this afternoon in between the rain. Who knows? Weathermen have been notoriously, and weather women have been notoriously wrong this past season. So, hey, maybe we'll get a break or try to get there sometime tomorrow. It's going to be a good show. A lot of over 300 vendors way to go. Early bow season, certain DMZs continue around the state. Statewide season opens on the 30th of September. Canada goose season continues as the Sorrel, Clapper Rail, Virginia Rail, Snipe, and Gallinule and Crow season continues. You can only hunt Monday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday only, as per the Migratory Bird Treaty way back in the early 70s. Talk about never say die with the fluke. Hey, man, they're still getting some keepers in the bay. I'm seeing that especially in southern Barnegat Bay and some down in Great Bay, even a keeper here or there. Plenty of fish on the move, but this blowout is going to – it always happens about this time in September, offshore storms, and we call it. But talk about never say die. I have to give credit to – I mean, they're trying. A lot of it's, you know, the symbolism thing, the holding hands along the beach or whatever. And now you're hearing people coming up to me, hey, Tom P., did you hear Orsted pulled out there? They absolutely halted everything about the offshore wind farms. Is that good? Disinformation, misinformation, an amalgam of any kind of information. My head is spinning on this. From this corner, Tom P., I always say there's too much money involved, a done deal. Who knows? But had a call from briefly about another topic. From Jim Hutchinson Jr. He's the managing editor of the New Jersey Delaware Bay edition of the Fisherman Magazine. And he is the top fishing investigative news reporter, bar none, people. I've been in this business well going on four and a half decades. Seen it all, man. And this guy is it. About something about what is happening up at Island Beach State Park amid all the talk about everything's been halted, nothing going on. So Jim was kind enough to join us before he's off up to Long Island. Jim, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. How are you?
You see my head. I have a head like a jack-o'-lantern. Imagine that exploding with all this information. To me, Jim, it's you know my stance, whatever you want to call it on this. It's happening. It's whatever. But came up with some information. Jim, I have people come out to you. Tom P., did you hear? It's halted. It's halted. It's done. It's over. It's canceling. No, not. I said, you sure it's not a delay? No. I'm reading all the news reports. This news reports, if you want to call them, whatever. I know, Jim. Give us a lowdown. Well, you said something about it going on at Island Beach State Park. What's the dealio?
So Orsted is in Island Beach State Park as we speak. That's already started. We know that they already started in Ocean City on September 12th. They started digging up the street. Six people got arrested protesting Orsted there. We know that's right. Going on. Right. You know, when Orsted made this announcement, that was all smoke and mirrors. It's my opinion. You know, they're a stock company, investors, so they made a big stink for their investors because they want to go shake down the federal government for more money. Mm-hmm. So basically, and even like, I guess it's this week, six coastal governors, including our illustrious Phil Murphy, signed on to a letter to the Biden administration saying, hey, listen, Orsted says that they're not going to be able to do their work unless they get more money. But yet they continue to move forward. So really, I just see this as them posturing to try to get more taxpayer funding from us.
Sure.
And the other thing that the six coastal governors asked for, including Murphy, was you got to speed up the permit process. Speed up the permit process. You don't want any environmental impacts there. Just bless them. You know, just give them the right to do everything. So the last couple of weeks, I've been trying to get through to the DEP to find out about what's going on at Island Beach, right? Because they already started breaking the streets apart in Ocean City. What's going on in Island Beach? And they wouldn't say anything. But I had some sources telling me, no. Orsted's around, man. They're all over the place. They're crawling around like rats, right? So DEP wouldn't get any answers. We kept pushing. This week in my video fishing forecast, I finally got the DEP's slow walkers and jive talkers to give me some of the basics. And that is, yeah, well, Orsted's doing a little bit of work, but it's just sampling work. Don't worry about it. It's just sampling. They're not going to do the full scale construction until October. So people don't even realize that Orsted is moving in heavy equipment to begin full-scale construction at Island Beach State Park from October all the way through until January. So I broke that in my video fishing forecast this week. I also spent some time interviewing Seaside Park Mayor John Peterson, who he came to me because he goes, are you getting any information with the DEP? Because they won't tell me anything.
I can relate to that, Hutch.
Think about that, man. You just mentioned it. You've been in this business for 40 years or more, and I've been in it for 20 years. You've helped me along because you made a couple of, you know, you knew which rocks to stand on, you know, to get across the stream in the past. But have you ever heard of something like this where not only is the media shunned, but local elected officials can't get any information from the DEP or the state? None.
Move along. Nothing to see here.
And for some reason, members of the public are like, well, that's okay. Well, it's because Murphy's trying to help us and Wynn's going to save the planet. I just don't get it.
And Jim, it's beyond a rush. It's, again, I've never seen anything move this quickly. I know some people over the years that try to get bulkhead improvements, took them 2 to 3, and then they were denied a permit for a friggin' bulkhead improvement. Or, you know what I mean? Or to fix a boat ramp or something. And yet this multi-billion dollar what is turning into fiasco is just full speed ahead, damn the torpedoes. Or damn the fossil fuels. How's that? That's better, right? Damn the fossil fuels.
My sister bought a house in Waretown many years ago. I needed to get in touch with a lobbyist buddy of mine to go through to the DEP because they didn't want to give her a permit because on the charts going back to 1647, there was a spung there, a creek, a bog. It hasn't been there in 300-400 years. You know, you can't get a permit to build a shed. But Murphy and the rest of the governors want to spearhead this thing. I mean, Tom, they're digging up Island Beach State Park. This is a park that was protected by legislation many years ago. You're not allowed to industrialize it. I don't get it.
And Jim, it's happening now. What about angler access?
Well, so DEP spokesman Ms. Karen Shinsky told me that impact to access will be minimal. Now, what kind of subjective term is minimal? I mean, what? For a person that doesn't go to Island Beach State Park, minimal means nothing, right? For a guy who goes up there every day and drives the beaches to go surf fishing, minimal could mean something else.
Right.
So, yeah, and really, you know, I try to call Congressman Van Drew's office this week to let them know there's a lot of really weird stuff going on in the state of New Jersey with the gerrymandering and switching legislative districts. Switching congressional districts. Island Beach State Park happens to be kind of like a no man's land. You have Seaside Park going right up to it and then into Berkeley Township. But, you know, they're messing up with the state, Tom, and nobody seems to be doing anything about it. But I just want people to know because, really, it's like what you said at the beginning. Oh, Orsted's not doing any more work. No, that's a lie.
Jim, these are from people, and I'm looking at these and absolutely, eyes all blazed. Yeah, we won. We held enough hands along the beaches that we stopped them. And I don't know what to say.
The streets of Ocean City last week, September 12th, they were out there digging up the streets. And now they're going to get ready to literally dig up Island Beach State Park.
Yeah.
It's not over. It's not done. They haven't walked away. That's not just sewer equipment at Island Beach State Park. Orsted is in the house, and you cannot trust your government. What else can I say?
Jim,
my country cannot trust my government.
And Jim, you said it all. Now, listeners, to me again, Tommy, there's no stopping. It's inevitable. A delay here, delay there. Who knows what? But as Hutch says, they're there, they're here. The aliens have landed, and like rats, they are everywhere. And I don't, Hutch, whatever. I mean, I really respect Senator Jefferson Van Drew. I've known Jeff for well over 20 years. And he's, again, fighting the good fight, Hutch, fighting the good fight, but the never-say-die thing. Remember we spoke about this a couple of months ago, and there's always the slim glimmer of hope, people. Don't get me totally wrong on this, but this, Hutch, this is just too big with too much money and other countries involved and governments all in cahoots. It's scary. We're seeing it. It's happening right in front of us.
I've been having a lot of debates with people who really believe that unless we build industrial offshore wind, climate change is going to worsen and the planet's going to die. So it's very hard for me to have this conversation because I've done a lot of research into the damning effects to our coastal ecosystems, to our summer flounder fishery, to turbidity, to the coastal cold, the mid-Atlantic cold pool, a lot of things, right? So it's very hard because a lot of people believe that if we don't do this, the planet's going to die. And I just, it's hard because the mainstream media is carrying that water. And then people like me are trying to ask questions because, like, listen, I can't take a position either way. I need to know what it's going to do for fishermen and the fishing industry. That's all I care about. So
exactly
these are
right.
the answers I need to find. So if I can't find those answers, then something's rotten from Denmark.
And that's
really what we're looking at.
Yeah. Denmark, I like that. But, Hutch, again, hitting the proverbial brick wall. And listen, what damage is going to be done again? In the substratum, the ocean bottom, how's it going to affect the fish, as Hutch says, up migrating east-west migration? Nobody knows. And, again, another thing, too, angler access by these windmills. Oh, and, Jim, what gets me is that there are several charter captains I know that are all gung-ho for it. Well, look at Rhode Island. Look at this. Look at the Gulf with the oil rig, the fishing around there. I said, is there guaranteed access? Well, they're working on that. That's the answer I get. And these guys... Are they in the pockets? Who knows? And then you hear about people that were totally against them before, now switching sides that are with the offshore windmills that were for fishermen's rights. That's really, shouldn't say puzzling, Hutch. Again, my opinion, but that's we followed a money trail, I think.
Well, anybody that you talk to that points to Rhode Island, you should point them to the Rhode Island Saltwater Anglers Association. Because RESA was been involved in this. They've dealt with this Block Island wind farm, but now they're walking away in unison because of what's going on up there. You know, they popped five turbines into water with valuable structure on the bottom where fish already congregated and said, look, there's all kinds of fish up here. You know, and that was just their foot in the door. Say, look how great this is. Five turbines, five tiny little turbines. And now... All these wind companies said, we're going to use these five turbines to build out 5,000 of these suckers. And the Rhode Island Anglers Association up there says, no, you're not. We don't want you here. So anybody that thinks that this foot in the door is going to be great because look at Rhode Island, should go up and talk to the folks in Rhode Island and see what they really think.
Exactly.
This is really scary. These aren't oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico. These things are high-powered turbines. Each one of them is going to have a high-powered submarine cable carrying the power to a substation, which is then going to generate more power to send it down a bigger cable to connect into the coast. And we're talking about tens of thousands of miles of high-powered cable, millions of acres of leased lands off of our federal coast, and 3,500 wind turbines.
Hutch, let me play this out. Let me play it forward. Okay, wow. The summer flounder number. What happened to summer? Yeah, recreational overfishing. As a result
exactly
of these turbines
right.
effing everything up on the bottom. Blame the fishermen. Well, Hutch,
no
thanks
one
for
joining us. No one said that already.
Thanks for joining us on that. I want to get you on about the summer flounder maybe in a week or two. But travel safely, little brother. Be good. Thanks for breaking the news on Rack and Fin Radio. Appreciate it.
Bless. Enjoy the decoy show, folks.
See you, Hutch. Told you. Investigative reporter, fishing scene. Second to none. Okay, grab that cup, grab that Red. We'll be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station.
Wendy's new breakfast 2 for $3 biggie bundles let you create your own delicious combo. Choose from a sausage biscuit, egg and cheese biscuit, small seasoned potatoes, and a medium hot coffee. But it's obvious which combo's the best. Sausage biscuit and small seasoned potatoes. Well, maybe it's the fresh cracked egg and cheese biscuit with a medium hot coffee or two savory sausage biscuits. Whichever you pick, you can't go wrong. Choose wisely. Choose Wendy's new 2 for $3 biggie bundles.
Limited time only. U.S. price and participation may vary. Not valid in a combo. Single item at regular price.
We said 1,500 hours.
Jax's hangar flies high thanks to his military precision.
Job, you copy?
Oh. He wants to land some aircraft mechanics, preferably with a military background.
Okay, I wasn't aware of a new timeline.
Cancel. Stand by for new assignments.
Indeed can help him hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our hiring platform instantly connects you with quality candidates, and you can schedule and conduct virtual interviews right from the Indeed dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Well, this is a very early Happy New Year, a week early, because... Okay, let's get out there. I'll be in the studio early next week because next Saturday is the opening of the gray squirrel and cottontail rabbit season. I am just too the hares and all that other stuff, but I don't think there's any of those around. I'm just too excited. It's going to open September 30th, and I like the deer and the ducks and all, but probably especially the bushy tails. My favorite small game hunting to be had, and I guess I get the pheasant stamps and all that. But it's just a lot of fun, especially this time of year and through October. Nothing beats squirrel hunting in October. It's just a great and the cottontails too. Now again, gun, shotgun, bow, or air rifle, you can get them done. But Tom P, what about the bunnies? What about the squirrels? You don't read much about it, hear much about it. Well, populations are, I guess, steady, improving, declining. Who knows? But join us on the line right now to talk the small game prospectus for the rabbit and squirrel season is Peter Stark. He's a biologist with New Jersey DEP's Bureau of Wildlife Management. Peter is also the Fur Bear and Small Game Mammal Project leader. So we're talking bushy tails and we're talking cottontails with Peter Stark. Peter, thanks for joining us. How you doing, little brother? I'm too excited.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Appreciate the invite.
Oh, you're more than invited. Again, Happy New Year, people in the parallel universe of Rack and Fin Radio, knowing the season opens or reopens and these calls for a New Year's celebration. Peter, I have my 20 and my 12, and I got all my shells, and the guns are ready to go, got my vest. And the best part, Pete, about especially September 30, I'm looking at it. Got my orange vest, T-shirt, orange cap, shorts and boots. Hunting in shorts and a T-shirt, September hunting squirrel. I'm in some tall cotton there, little brother. Well, Peter, let's get right to the bushytails. Probably New Jersey's most underutilized small game resource. Although, listen, let me tell you, when I was a youngster, I'm talking before a lot of your parents were even born, you had to wait until the first week or second week of November, whenever the general small game season opened, to hunt bushytails. I used to always wonder why, because we'd be out there in October bow hunting or fishing, whatever. Squirrels everywhere. I'm saying, boy, why can't we hunt? Wow, things changed in the early 80s, I believe. They instituted an early squirrel season, started, I guess, the first week in October, and it's been nothing but gangbusters. Now I'm seeing more and more and more people taking advantage of this. And I'm wondering, Peter, the increased pressure of the early season, squirrel populations seem pretty steady statewide, do they not?
That is true. Yep.
Was there that much of an impact, you think, with the early season with more participation? Because I'm seeing them everywhere. I mean, it's just the numbers just keep replenishing. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly a very stable population. I don't think that the early portion of the season is going to have that much of an impact on them. They seem to be quite healthy. We do have a bag limit of 5 squirrels, daily bag limit in place. So that kind of helps make sure that people aren't over harvesting them. But yeah, no concerns, I don't think, as far as the population goes.
Peter, mast is critical, correct? Now, how does it look this year, I guess, red oaks, white oaks? It depends on what part of the state you're in. There's hickories, some beech nuts. Mast is critical, but I'll tell you one thing. I have never, ever, ever had any, well, a couple of areas under good white oak stand, but great hunting bordering a cornfield, especially later on in October. You ever see these things dragging ear of corn up to the crotch of a branch in a tree? Those little suckers are strong, man. They love corn, do they not?
They do. I mean, pretty much everything does, for sure. Yeah.
various other parts of their diet besides mass? Do they eat anything? Hey, listen, once, I'll never forget this. I was working as a greenskeeper, Weekway Golf Course in Newark. Yeah, it's Newark, not Newark, Newark. Guy said to me, I'm working with, we're you know, cleaning traps out. He's raking sand or something. He says, hey, Tommy P, check it out. Look up. Hey, man, right there in a branch of an oak is a squirrel eating a mouse. Have they, can they be carnivorous?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have believed it unless I saw it. P.I. says, holy God, look at that. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, so definitely not a very common thing to have happen. But, you know, other sources of food for a squirrel are going to be stuff like fruit, buds, berries.
Mm-hmm.
They'll also eat maple seeds. That can be a big part of their diet at certain times of the year. As well as bark. So sometimes they will chew on bark of, you know, twigs, other parts of a tree, just like almost like a porcupine will.
Peter, are there, besides hunting pressure and naturally predation, pretty much of what other population limiting factors are there? Now, squirrels, unlike rabbits, people, squirrels die hard. I mean, they give up the ghost hard. I've seen one get hit by a red-tailed hawk, and that hawk flew away barely. I mean, they fight to the death, but things like, besides predation, are there such things as squirrel diseases or anything like that?
So there are definitely diseases that affect squirrel. You know, I don't think it's going to be a terribly population-limiting factor, but certainly can be a cause of mortality for individual animals. Really, the number one thing after predation for gray squirrels is going to be habitat. So, you know, if you look at, you know, squirrels are highly correlated with mass producing trees like oaks and hickories.
Mm-hmm.
So the more there are of those species of trees on the landscape, theoretically, you would see more squirrels present in those areas. And also of course, the inverse is true. If you have, areas of where those trees were historically present but have been cut down for whatever reason, that would also correspond in a decrease in squirrels being more abundant in those areas.
Well, Peter, I know, again, it's a very underutilized resource. As you said, squirrel populations are steady and healthy on the overall, but it's a point of consternation for me when I get to travel. Listeners, it's a blessing. I get to travel around the state, a lot of areas, from High Point to Cape May, a lot of points in between. The development, I mean, I'm seeing huge swaths of land now. I mean, 20 acres here, 40 acres there, 50, you know, pad sites, warehouses, residential development. Man, the habitat loss is a real problem.
Sure.
And I don't see where it's ending, I guess. But again, on the corollary being squirrels adapt. Check that with your bird feeder, man. Move into a nice little place in suburbia, put out a bird feeder. Next thing you know, it's wiped out because of the squirrels. They adapt. Question, reproductive frequency, once a year, twice a year?
Most gray squirrels are going to do twice a year. So certainly they have a high reproductive potential. Their litter size can be large. There's a record in North Carolina of a litter of 8 squirrel babies, although that's not the norm. But certainly, you know, breeding twice a year, producing litters of, you know, say an average of, you know, three babies or you know, give or take. So, you know, you think they have a pretty good reproductive potential. And like you said, they are quite adaptive.
So that really
helps them.
Because I've seen, again, usually mid-March around St. Patrick's Day, a little later, you see them chasing each other. You'll see two males chasing a female through the trees or whatever. And then again, usually in June or July, you see it again. So your average twice a year, which is good. Okay, now, question I'd ask you before we get to the cottontails. And listen, I know my squirrel cottontail cacciatore is a Tom P. specialty. In fact, I think I may go to business for reason. But, from where I've been hunting, you know, I get to hunt all over the place, all over the state. I noticed it in Sussex, Warren County, probably 10, 12 years ago. Moving south, the preponderance now of melanistic, a.k.a. black gray squirrels. What is that all about?
Well, so that's a recessive trait, recessive gene trait in gray squirrels. Like you said, it's just a color morph. So it really depends on, you know, if that you know, shows up in a local population of squirrels, theoretically it could spread, you know, based on how many of those individuals are breeding with one another.
You know, it's really weird, Peter, is that I've never seen, you know, you see piebald, you know, deer, piebald whitetails. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a combination gray and black squirrel. They're either gray or they're black.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty wild. Now, I had one gentleman insistive, older guy, even older than me, been hunting for 100 years here, it seems, that it's a separate species of squirrel. He said it's like a fox squirrel, sort of a in between. I just looked at the guy. No kidding. Really? So let's clear it right now. It is a color variation of the gray squirrel. Okay, to the cottontails. Right. One thing about the cottontails is cottontails are like pizza. Everything in the wild pretty much eats them. Foxes, mm-hmm. hawks, snakes, the whole bit. And they just keep going. Again, here to me is where the loss of habitat is really, really a critical limiting factor. Would you agree?
I would agree with that for sure.
And again, when you're seeing these areas that were meadows and fields, you know, growing up, and you bring the beagles there, and now, whoa, it's a subdivision. Or now, that's why, listeners, we're blessed with some great management areas and great lands management crews here. Shout out to Jimmy Hardaby. He knows who he is.
Oh, yeah.
Up there. Again, habitat improvements to benefit not only small game species, but you know, everything, all wildlife involved. Done a masterful job in improving habitat on swaths of land open to the public to hunt that are providing some pretty good rabbit hunting.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Jimmy. He's doing a great job with you know, the areas that he maintains. And certainly, you know, we try our best on our wildlife management areas and other tracts of state land that we manage to you know, promote good habitat for cottontails, you know, as well as pheasants and other small game species. But certainly, you know, like you said, the habitat loss for rabbits in particular is quite a big thing. You know, you look at New Jersey, you know, 40, 50 years ago, there were, you know, many, many small farms throughout the state, and now most of those are gone. And you think about what kind of habitat a cottontail prefers. It's, you know, brushy areas,
right,
adjacent to fields, and you know, we have definitely less of that now, so definitely is an impact on their population.
Yeah, Peter, one of the greatest rabbit hunting experiences I ever had, we used to have some beagles, and we were invited, my cousin Mario was invited, brought me along and our dogs. We had two dogs. And mine was Ladybug. She was a slow trailer because my mom used to like to give her veal scallopini every once in a while. You know what I mean? But we were hunting. I guess it was Cumberland County, bordering Canton, whatever. It was that many years ago. Blackberry fields of blackberry canes bordered by brush and old timber, old telephone poles that were knocked in. The dogs we had, they were passing out from running so much. That's how many rabbits there were. And now I went by there maybe half a dozen years ago, same general area, not except for some ornamental shrubbery on the homes, not a field to be found. And there you go. That's what happens. Now, limiting factors on the cottontails, any diseases prevalent that could wipe out a local population?
Certainly there are some that would wipe out a local population, nothing that would impact our statewide population. Disease monitoring is something that we, of course, take very seriously, but, you know, as of now, we haven't really seen anything that's going to be impacting their population as a whole.
And listen, predation is a thing. I tell you, you look at a rabbit the wrong way, it dies. Seriously.
Right.
I mean, I read the book Watership Down with, Bigwig? I mean, he was a badass bunny. He kicked everybody's ass. But for the most part, you have the raptors. Owls love to pick off rabbits just before dark.
Yeah.
You have the foxes. You have the coyotes. You have the snakes, the weasels, whatever. So reproductions on cottontails, average 2 litters a year, 3. More, you always hear about rabbits. They breed like rabbits. What's the dealio?
Right. So they are quite prolific. And they have a long breeding season. I mean, it can start in January and run all the way into September, depending on, you know, where exactly you are in the country, but that's kind of an average. So they can produce anywhere from 3 to 7 litters of young. So quite a range there. And within that, You know, they're going to be producing about an average of 3 to 4, young per litter. So I don't know if we have an average for New Jersey specifically, but that would be more of like a regional average. Mm-hmm. So certainly quite productive. Have really a high potential because the fact, like you said, that everything eats them,
yeah.
They sort of need to be prolific breeders to kind of stay on top of things.
Yes. Nature abhors a vacuum. Keep those cottontails pumping out. We're speaking with Peter Stark, biologist with the Jersey DEP's Bureau of Wildlife Management. Peter is also the Fur Bearer and Small Game Mammal Project Leader. Topic is next weekend's opener. Cottontail rabbit, gray squirrel. It's going to be great. Hunting hours are sunrise, a half hour after sunset. Gun, bow, air gun. And that's another thing, too, but this pellet rifle thing, opening that up, that is like when we used to hunt out of state with 22s, the squirrels especially, man. That is a blast. Populations are up. Listeners, get out there. It's a great, great early season opportunity of a small game. Pheasants and quail, that's a whole different ball game. But I'll tell you, Peter, I just love that, especially September through the month of October, a glorious time of year, and we have some still, despite the loss of habitat, some great squirrel and rabbit hunting. I thank you for joining us on Rack and Fin. By the way, are you going to get a chance to get out?
Oh, I don't know. We'll see. I hope so.
Tell you what I'll do. So. I have your email. I'm going to shoot that cottontail cacciatore recipe. Tell me what you think.
Oh, man, I would love that.
Okay,
thank
Peter. You.
You
take care. Thanks for joining us. See you, man.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Yep. A great season. A little long on that segment. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
The WPG Talk Radio app is everything South Jersey. Local news and information updated around the clock from New Jersey's largest radio news team. Breaking news push notifications just for South Jersey. Easily call and listen to all your favorite WPG Talk shows and more. Download the WPG Talk Radio app for your phone, tablet, Apple CarPlay, and Android Auto today at WPGTalkRadio.com.
Fox News. The big strike against the big three automakers is growing. GM and Stellantis workers will strike at all parts distribution centers, expanding the strike to 28 states. President Biden announcing the creation of the Federal Office of Gun Violence Prevention, saying that following each mass shooting, he hears demands to do something.
My administration has been working relentlessly to do something. To date, my administration has announced dozens of executive actions to reduce gun violence more than any of my predecessors at this point in their presidencies. And they include everything from cracking down on ghost guns, breaking up gun trafficking, and so much more.
The new office will be overseen by Vice President Harris and promises to work with local authorities to change gun legislation in the individual states. House Republicans still trying to avert a government shutdown next weekend. Only a skeleton crew continuing negotiations this weekend.
Your WPG Atlantic City Electric AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. High rip current risk in effect through Saturday evening. High wind warning in effect late tonight through Saturday evening. High surf advisory in effect Saturday morning through Saturday evening. And a coastal flood warning in effect Saturday afternoon through Saturday evening. Windy overnight. Periods of rain from Tropical Rainstorm Ophelia, low 59. Rain and wind from Tropical Rainstorm Ophelia Saturday. Flooding in poor drainage areas, high 66. I'm AccuWeather's Drew Shannon on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go. Look out below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. We got September 23rd and 24th. Hey, let's get to some fresh water stuff right now. Very important because the movement is on. That's why September is called the transition month, especially now towards the end of the ninth turn of the calendar page. Let's get it going. I'm not talking largemouth, not talking smallmouth, not talking pickerel, not talking bluegills, not talking perch either. Crappies, calicos, black and white crappies are perfused through South Jersey waters. They can be really picky, really choosy, and can get really aggressive this time of year through October. It's prime calico time here in the Southern Tier County. Join us on the line right now, very good friend of Rack and Fin Radio. It is Jeff Smith. He is the owner, president, Leland Lures, manufacturer of the famous trout magnet. As one guy at a tackle shop in Cape May said, as he's loading up for the stocking, he's going to be down in Ponder Lodge Pond in November, the magical trout magnet. And also, Never heard much about it, but this crappy magnet series is some new stuff out there. Going to be killer, killer on the Southern Tier County Calicos. Jeff Smith, I'm too excited. How you doing, man? Let's talk crappies in transition. Great. Go.
What's up, Tom P? Yeah, Tom P. Listen, this is the time of year when I get excited about catching crappie because, you know, now down here in the South, they call them crappie. Up there, they call them crappie.
Right.
But they all are the same. They eat really good.
Yeah.
This time of year. They start schooling up better and being more aggressive, and that water temperature cools off, and it's just a great time to get out there and get after them.
Now, Jeff, again, different. You have a bullpen full of crappie magnet products here. The original crappie magnet. You have the new slab curly. You have the fin spin. Okay, that looks deadly.
Yeah, well, you know,
picking which bait, which color to use now, especially most of our waters, except like, for example, Pondo Lodge, Pompey, down here in Avilas and Cape May, our waters are stained, a little turbid, whatever. Colors, what baits would you recommend?
Okay, so here's the thing. You know, the trout magnet has been our bait for, you know, 30 years now. And for trout, it just, there's nothing that'll touch it. And a lot of people use it for crappie, too, by the way. I mean, a lot of people do.
Uh-huh.
What we found out is these crappie lakes, it's hard to fish that thing sometimes when they're deeper. So we started making crappie lures about 15, 20 years ago and found out that, man, there's about 20 different ways to catch a crappie. And different times of the year, they like different presentations. So if you look at our product line, the crappie magnet series line has so many different baits. The crappie magnet, the original crappie magnet, mm-hmm. is a split tail grub, just like the trout magnet. It's for vertical fishing. When those fish are on a brush pile and sitting still, you can pitch to them with that crappie magnet, and it's bad ditty. That split tail is, in our opinion, better than a straight tail or even a curly tail. Mm-hmm. In particular, now, Tom, this is the big thing to remember. If you've got black crappie, the crappie magnet, the ugliest bait we make, is the best bait to use. For some reason, that size is what they want.
Mm-hmm.
They also like that tiny dancer because it's small, too.
Oof,
and those
oof.
Clear lakes, the tiny dancer is what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it gets to be that real stained water and they're still aggressive, that slab curly is what I go to because it's got a thump to it. It turns really slow, but it's got a really good wobble to it. And in the water, they seem to feel its movement more so than seeing it. And when I go to that slab curly, I put a fin spin on, which is a little underspin. It's a shad dart, just like the trout magnet
mm-hmm.
with that curly tail. The combination of the two, especially with the Garmin LiveScope and the stuff with forward-facing sonar, that's what I've been using lately. I can see them out there at 20, 30 feet. I can pitch to them, and you'll see them scream and get it. So really the type of water and even the species of crappie that I'm fishing for will determine which one of the baits I'm going to use. Black crappie, I'm going to lean towards a crappie magnet.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can go to a trout magnet. If it's stained water, I'm going to go to that slab curly. But all of them, every one of them, I'll use with our eye hole jig. The reason I'll use that eye hole jig is because it holds the scent in the eye. The
now, when you say scent, what are you talking about? They're not a liquid scent.
Okay.
What do you mean?
No, it's like a dough. And so basically, if you've seen, there's nibbles out there. Ours are called slab bites or a little piece of bait. You typically put them on the hook for crappie. But in this case, we shove it in the eye. It stays in the eye, changes the eye color, but it stays in there for 20 or 30 fish and oozes out the scent out of the eye the whole time. It's really an incredible addition to our crappie line, and you can use it with anybody's bait. It's a jig head with a hole right through where the eyes are. And because of that, it makes it perfect for crappie because it adds the scent. I don't care if it's clear, stained, whatever it is. It's a fact. You know, we used to spider rig a lot. A lot. Now, spider rigs, when you put poles out, you have 8 poles out to start a boat. Okay? And so it's nuts.
I've done that. Listen, it's a psycho circus. Go ahead, Jeff.
That was 100% difference. They always like that scent. There's times they'll hit it with or without it. That means it's just easy.
Mm-hmm.
But there was tons of times that they would catch it. They would bite it more because it had that scent. So scent matters. So I think that eye hole makes a big difference.
Jeff, let me ask you this, though. The shape of the head, you have different shapes, correct?
Yes, different shapes of the heads. There's round. There's hex head. The hex head is one of those things where you can see it better on that forward-facing sonar.
Okay.
Yeah, so forward-facing sonar is really what crappie fishermen are using right now because you can see the fish, you can see them bite, you can see all the the nuances of the bait and how they respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that hex head is called the hammerhead eye hole. It is the best one we've got because it's wider. And so you thought the big thing about the eye hole is this: whenever you have an 1/8 ounce jig, it's going to be a certain size no matter what. It weighs 1/8 of an ounce. But when we made the eye hole, we took out the lead in the center. That made by volume the jig 30% larger, if that makes sense.
Oh, sure.
So
it does,
on
yeah.
the sonar stuff, you can see it so much better. It just stands out better, just bigger. Same mm-hmm. weight, bigger. So that's why people are really, really liking this eye hole. Not only does it add scent, but it adds a bigger volume so you can see it on forward-facing sonar.
Now, these are available. This is 1/32nd, 1/16th, 1/8th, and 3/16th ounces. Jeff, I want to kick back, though, one bait you didn't mention, which I have great luck with certain times of year, especially now, and again, as spring gets into summer, that badass slab magnet. Whoa.
Yeah, no, the slab magnet is for really stained water.
Yep.
And when the shad, the bait they're eating on is really big. You know, you have people that fish with a baby shad. This is a full-grown granddaddy shad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a giant bait, which is, you know, it used to be it was the biggest bait in the market. Since then, there's a lot of people that have come out with big baits. But it's a really big shad bait. It's got a flat tail. When the water is stained, it's the one that they can see the best. So you definitely want to use that one in that stained water. And again, white crappie. White crappie prefer that slab magnet in that stained water. I catch black crappie too, but
I was just going to ask you about it, because we have some white crappie waters down here. They're preferring it. It's a slab magnet. This is, by the way, in a, what do you call it, cross-section here. We've used it very effectively as a teaser when we're fluke fishing, believe it or not.
Gotcha.
Oh, well, believe
that
it or not.
Sense. Yeah, it makes total
Jeff,
sense.
Jeff, real fast, we're up against a break in a couple of minutes. I just want to get into, again, the Popeye jig heads, listen, they were the hair jigs, they work beautifully. But this tiny dancer, I see applications beyond crappies with this. I'm thinking like stock trout. I'm thinking big bluegills. I'm thinking perch. This thing is a bam, bam, the tiny dancer. What's it? It's under 2 inches, correct?
Yeah, it's about 1.5 inches. It's real small. It's got a little tight wobble to it. And, you know, it's one of those things where it does have a lot of different uses. Brim in particular, you know, they like it because it's small enough for them to eat it. And trout, not so much. Now, the stock trout, you get in a pond, I think you could definitely do it there and there's no motion to the water. I think it could have, you know, some relevance there. But for the most part, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sticking with the trout magnet. You know me, Tuffy. I'm going to have a hard time believing that. If there's a trout in there, he's got issues.
He has. Again, on the SOS line and the fluorocarbon leader. Well, Jeff, when do you notice, now you're in Arkansas and up here, when do you notice when the crappies get really selective? Now, through the ice, crappies are game on through the ice. There seems to be that dead zone period just before ice up. At least up here, they shut down. How do you handle that? You have a day to go out. You want to target crab in that very difficult little time span. What are you using? So what are you using, Jeff, in that tough time? What do you got?
Well, here's the deal. When it gets tough, crappie in particular are very, very difficult creatures to get to bite when they don't want to. But what we found is this, is the one way to get them is do two things, completely downsize. So what do you think I'm going to go to when I found a crappie that won't eat anything, Tommy? What do you think I'm going to go to?
Trout mag.
Ding, 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 number one. Number two, it's got to be held still. They want it right over their nose and no movement at all.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, and then the third thing I would say is if you add scent, it can help too. So that eye hole, on a, you know, we have a all the way down to 1/32nd with that eye hole and coming out with a 1/64th for the trout magnet body, too, with no collar here real soon. And that's what we do when we get those finicky crappie. We go as small as we can get. We add scent. We hold it right above their head. And eventually they'll tip up and eat it, but not as often as I'd like. But that's really the only way we can get them to bite.
And, Jeff, isn't it wild, though, that under the ice – I mean, sometimes we can't keep them from banging. We're using trout mags and other baits, and they go crazy. And yet, and that I call it the dead zone. the crappy dead zone,
yes,
that whatever, 2 or 3, 4 week period, whatever it happens. Okay, Jeff, thanks for joining us on Rack and Fin. Listeners, go to troutmagnet.com. Check out the crappy magnet section. Transition time, as Jeff said, whether north, south, east, or west, the bite is on. It's going to go balls to the wall through October into early November. Hopefully we have a pretty stable and warm autumn season. Jeff, this is the best time of year. This is even better than spring for me. This is crappy. And this is where I go crazy, because they're stocking trout. You have bow season for deer. You got duck season's going on. The saltwater fishing's turning on. But me and my lovely Deemer make special time for the crappies this time of year. It's a great time to be out there.
Life is good this time of year. I love the fall. I guarantee it.
Okay, Jeff, give that website one more time. And Facebook, what do you got?
Troutmania.com or crappiemania.com will take you to the same place. Come and see us. Let us help you out catching fish.
Listen, Slab Curly and this Tiny Dancer and this eye hole with the crappy magnet slab bites, 10-fish limit. Go get them and get it. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Jeff, there's nothing sweeter than autumn crappies in the frying pan, my brother. Ha ha.
Sir Lip 'em All, Tom P. Sir Lip 'em All.
I'll see you, brother. Best of the family.
You too. Bye.
It's just that time of year. I had to get my buddy Jeff on. This product, and listen to me. My motto, they don't hesitate when you show them live bait. Had crappies pass up fathead minnows and tiny killies in favor of this other. It's amazing. Okay, be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station. Fox on Tech.
Earlier this week, we told you that Google was integrating its chatbot AI Bard into its productivity apps like Gmail, Docs, and Google Drive. Now, Google is adding generative AI to one of its biggest things, YouTube. At its annual creators confab called Made on YouTube, the company revealed artificial intelligence will become available to YouTube video makers that will respond to prompts and create backgrounds and other images to be inserted into those videos. The feature is called Dream Screen, and it will be deployed across YouTube's Shorts features. But another AI-based feature in the works will overdub videos using the creator's own voice, but in alternate languages. All of this gets wrapped up in a new but yet-to-debut YouTube Create app designed for content creators to have an easier time producing the video content that makes both them and YouTube money. With Fox on Tech, I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yeah, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of September 23rd and 24th with this weather sort of put the kibosh on the summer flounder remaining of the season, at least for the next 2 days, maybe less, but we shall see. Stuff. Want to get a fishing report from Justin Denner, Fanatics on West Avenue in Ocean City. Some hot stuff going on there before the blow, and maybe it'll continue afterwards. Justin, how you doing, little brother? What is the scene?
And Tom, man, I'm hoping that it's going to be okay after this. You know, I hope we get a day or two of solid fluke action. But it seems like we're still going to get the blues because they, you know, seemingly showed up in droves in the inlets and out front. And we're talking like, you know, the 1 to 3 pounders.
Perfect.
A lot on mullet, mackerel, that kind of stuff. Pompano showed up heavy in our surf as well.
Pompano, whoa.
Yep.
Give me a size on those little suckers.
About like 8 to 9 inches has been the average. They've been small, but, you know, it's been a lot of fun for the people that have been finding them.
They're going to go in the pan. Every pompano?
Yeah. Have not. But, no, and aside from that, tog has been hot. Sheep's head has been hot around all the bridges and piers.
There you go.
Green crab, fiddlers, you know, they've been chewing.
Okay, Jasmine, what about the tog now? Because I saw some getting hammered on the sand fleas.
Yep. Yeah, they work. But after this blow and after this northeast storm, I don't know if you're going to be able to find many.
They're going to be washed down to the Carolinas or up to Maine. Well, Justin, what about stripers, the bass situation? What do you got, little brother?
There's a ton of them around. But the only problem is there's so much bait that they're struggling to catch. I'm hearing if you got spot or eels, it is a ticket. That's the way to go around these bridges at night. But there are a lot of overfish, like mid-30 inches.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Justin, what about, before I let you go, what about weak fish?
I haven't heard many here. I've heard of a few down south, Sea Isle, Stone Harbor, Avalon, those areas of soft plastics, but they're heavy in the peanut bunker as well.
Yeah, Justin, there's finger mullet coming out, there's peanut bunker, there's spearing, there's a snapper blues. I mean, there's so much bait out there. It's going to be, and this is a tough time. There's fish around, there's plenty of bait, but damn, there's so much for them to eat.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to be perfect on what you give them.
Okay, Justin, what does it look like for the last couple of days? Say we get a little window in here to close out the flounder season. You're going to go with live bait? You're going to go with gulp or what?
I would go with something with as much smell as you can possibly go. I would do gulp, mackerel, or squid strips scented because the water's going to be dirty the last few days.
Okay, there we go, man. Justin, you take care. Have a good week, bro.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, hopefully that'll do it for this the storm system, man. Let's get it cleared out. Sacrifice this week and get it cleared out. We got some great fishing coming. Hey, just a reminder, too, the 69th Annual Long Beach Island Surf Fishing Classic 2023 with over, 25,000 in prizes and a new 2023 Surfmaster Prize new this year. It's going to be happening October 7th through December 10th. Register early to receive a 2023 LBI Surf Fishing Classic hat and decal. Go to www.lbisfc.com. You have categories for striped bass, bluefish, and kingfish. Bonus prizes for tog and red drum. It's going to be a great event. 69th annual, man, keeping it going. Whew, man, again, get these storms out of the way. Out of the way now. I'll be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of September 23rd and 24th. Just a few things before we close out. Don't forget October 14th. It's the annual Sporting Clays fundraiser, New Jersey Outdoor Alliance, up there at the Great Red Wing Sporting Clays, 317 Suey's Landing Road in Port Republic, New Jersey. A $75 donation gets you 100 clay birds, lunch, drinks, shirt, hat, whatever, the whole bit. It's going to be a great time. NJO is out there in the forefront fighting for you. Like the UBNJ and State Federation of Sportsmen's Club, go to NJOA.org to find out more about the annual Sporting Clays fundraiser, New Jersey Outdoor Alliance. The youth registration is still being taken for the youth pheasant hunt coming up November 4th. It's going to run through that week, too. They will not take any walk-ons, any late entries. Registration closes October 15th. No ifs, ands, or buts. Go to njfishandwildlife.com to find out more about it. Again, get the kids involved. They're putting out 10 wildlife management. There's going to be stocked a lot of beautiful pheasants out there. The pheasant hunt, it's going to run again, like I said, November 4th through, again, the 6th, again, through the 10th. The waterfowl hunts, youth waterfowl hunts, North Zone, October 7th and February 3rd, October 14th and February 3rd in the South Zone, and October 28th and February 3rd in the Coastal Zone. The firearm deer hunt's going to be November 18th. And next year, the youth turkey hunt is going to be April 20th, 2024. Again, go to njfishandwildlife.com, find out about these. Get the youngsters involved. Hey, want to make a difference in Jersey's deer hunting? Don't forget the forums. One is down. The other one is coming up the 28th in the Central Region. That's going to be held at 1200 Florence Columbus Road in Bordentown at the Rutgers Eco Complex, 6:30 p.m. Get there early. It's going to be packed down here in the Southern Region. It was pulled from Batstow Village Visitor Center because there's going to be they're anticipating way too many people. That's going to be October 5th, also at 6:30, at Stockton University, 101 Vera King Drive in Galloway. Get your GPS put in 0205-94412 to get directions if you're coming in from another part of the state. That'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio. Get out and enjoy. Bad weather here, sacrifice weekend. It's going to get better. Fishing and hunting, it's off the charts. Stay well. Remember, God bless America, God bless our troops, God bless our first responders and law enforcement. See you next week, Rack and Fin Radio.